Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
We've tried a lot of terrorists in our courts. We have them in our federal prisons. They've never escaped. And these folks are no different. But it's been one of those things that's been subject to a lot of, in some cases, pretty rank politics. Oh, yes,
all right, it's the Savage Nation. Welcome to the program. We have President Obama. I've given him a new name because he seems to have a problem with bowing. He bows to the King of Saudi Arabia, bowed to the Premier of Japan, bowed to the Premier of China, and astonishingly, the other day in Tampa, Florida, President Obama bowed at the waist to the Mayor of Tampa. It's shocking, astounding how this man is servile to foreign leaders and to women mayors, but hostile to the actual American people. So we're going to affectionately name him President Obama. In the last soundbite in the Savage Nation, you heard President Obama bowing down to Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and saying he deserves all the protections of the United States Constitution. Now, I've heard all the liberal arguments about this. The arguments go like this.
Well, we have to show the world that we're superior to them. We have to show all those bad Arabs what democracy really is. And so we're going to afford them all the protections of the ACLU. We're going to give them the Lawyers Guild. We're going to give them every protection. We're going to give them halal meals and Qurans and all the good stuff.
But we're going to take our U.S. Marines and try them in Iraq for committing war crimes against Iraqi murderers. We're going to take our Marines and send them to trials in Iraq and not give them the same benefit of the doubt that this President Obama or Obama is giving to Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. Now, I ask you something. Tell me what's wrong with this picture. When ultra-liberal Senator Charles Schumer says, no, we don't want to give him a civilian trial in New York City, but President Obama, who refuses to learn what happened in, where shall we start? New Jersey? Virginia, Massachusetts, and maybe today where the election is taking place in Illinois, the man refuses to recognize the world he is living in, continuing to push forward ideas that are still popular in the far reaches of the academic left, but not at all popular anywhere in the United States of America except on certain cable channels where people urinate on themselves in the middle of a show and have to be mopped up by groomers. Now, this is the Savage Nation. I recognize that I'm trying to shock you. But I'm also telling you the truth. Make believe that I'm telling you the truth in a shocking manner, but it's still the truth. Here are some other headlines on the Savage Nation. Again, welcome to Extra Sports 860 AM in San Francisco, my new 50,000-watt flamethrower that is going to burn down the competition. We're going to burn down the interlopers who sound like Groucho Marx's mother after a hysterectomy, who pretend to be conservatives but were nothing more than flack lawyers for George Bush. Don't fool me. Don't call yourself a conservative when you worked inside the White House. You're nothing. You're a fraud, but you cashed in on a talk radio. I'm the real McCoy. That's why I have 10 million listeners. Anyway, 10 free books to the first 10 callers from 860 in San Francisco. I don't want to make the rest of the country jealous, but it's a new affiliate, and I've got to tell the people I'm back in a big way. Here are some of the other topics on the Savage Nation. If you get a call about President Obama, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Polls close at 5 p.m. Pacific time in Illinois. We will see whether Obama and his minions and his flacks are going to renew their grip on the poor people of that state. Here are the headlines on my website, michaelsavage.com. Almost 2 million listeners, 2 million uniques a month on this website. Here's the headline. From the LA Times, military yes men mimic Obama's do ask, do tell policy. That's right. Military yes men mimic Obama's do ask, do tell policy. Here's another headline from the Wash Times. Mercury and vaccines not linked to autism. A major British medical journal yesterday retracted the original flawed study that linked measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine to autism and bowel disease. They based it upon a small sample of 12 children at a birthday party, and they said that the vaccine contained mercury. It was false. It's a false scientific study along the lines of false global warming scare techniques. Well, now the British journal Lancet, a fine journal, I read it very often during my years working toward a PhD in human nutrition and epidemiology at the University of California at Berkeley. Lancet is one of the top journals. They yanked the article linking mercury in vaccines or vaccines themselves to autism and other diseases. We also have a great story up on my website, President in the Rye, Barack Obama as Holden Caulfield. I started it last Friday, where I said I'm going to trace the long arc between the character and the catcher in the Rye, Holden Caulfield, and Barack Hussein Obama, who is still playing the adolescent outsider. I'll do a little bit more of that today. Next one, congressman who called Marines cold-blooded killers in intensive care. That's that. I have words for him I really don't want to use. He's in a hospital bed. That's for Representative John Murtha, who called our Marines cold-blooded killers. One of the biggest porkers in the history of Congress attacked the U.S. Marines. He is now in intensive care for gallbladder problems. I want to remind you that the gallbladder produces bile, and I suspect that this grotesque creature is overflowing with the substance from his own gallbladder. Also on the Savage Nation, largest ever federal payroll to hit 2.15 million employees. That's right. Your friend Obama, from the far reaches of the academic left, has returned big government with a vengeance in the form of the largest federal workforce in modern history. What do they all do? Nobody knows. By the way, the Dems are going to tax the middle class to pay for their socialist programs. That's correct. You're going to get hit with it too, even if you're a liberal. Believe me. Harassment-free school opens in L.A. That's right. As early as the seventh grade, they can go to a school that serves lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and questioning youth. That is so wonderful. Why not bring it down to kindergarten? Because children, as you well know, in kindergarten know what their sexuality is. So why not put them in a nice, safe environment? You know the teachers in those schools are all safe. 12-year-old bride drops petition for divorce. Where is that coming from? Not from Texas. Not from New York. Where in the world would a 12-year-old girl who was married off to an 80-year-old man come from? Why, it's from that wonderful kingdom of Saudi Arabia, the land where women are treated so beautifully. It's interesting to me how women are put into full-body coverings by Muslims in countries like that, and how the feminists in this country are absolutely silent. How little 12-year-old girls are married off to 80-year-old degenerates, and not a word from the international women's movement. Interesting, isn't it? This is the Savage Nation. There's another article you must see. Three children mauled by a pack of escaped dogs in Southern California, not in Saudi Arabia. Escaped dogs became feral, ripped apart three children. Another dog story. Actress's boyfriend charged with beating her little dog. 6-pound dog beaten by a belt after this actress left town to go to work out of town. The boyfriend of the actress beat up this little puppy with a belt, blinded the dog, broke its ribs, punctured its lungs. What I'd like to do is see this bastard put into Pelican Bay, and I'd like to see the prisoners let loose on him for about 3 minutes. That would be justice served. But let's talk about justice not served, and that is giving Khalid Sheikh Mohammed a civilian trial in the United States of America as opposed to a military trial, which is, of course, what is appropriate for an enemy combatant. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. I am Michael Savage. Let's go to Al in New York. Al, you think KSM should be tried in New York. Why so?
I think it should be hung in Times Square. If we have.
Oh, any... I see. Not tried in New York, but hung in Times Square.
Hung in Times Square. And the reason Obama is doing it, he wants the whole world to listen to the platform of this sheikh, that he believes the same thing that that sheikh believes, but he cannot say it in public.
So you actually believe that Obama's sympathetic to the radical Muslim cause? You actually believe that?
his belief is what this sheikh will speak on the platform. That's why he's working on all directions, even if it's bringing him down, because that's what he believes in.
I can't say he believes in that. I don't know. I can't say for sure. I don't know where his loyalties lie. I don't think he's that patriotic. I know he sat for 20 years in Reverend Wright's church, who railed against white people, America, etc., and he didn't say a word. So his loyalties should be questioned, as we did during the campaign. But I wouldn't go so far as to say that the Obawa actually believes in what Khalid Sheikh Mohammed said. I believe he's part of the left-wing academic school that has no idea about the world that they live in. They have lived in the ivory tower so long that they don't know what the real world is, and they've never read nor seen Lord of the Flies. This is the Savage Nation. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I wonder who wrote the book of life.
It is the Savage Nation. We are dissecting President Obama's woman problem on the Savage Nation and his problem with authority, where he seems to have contempt for the American people but respect for the world's terrorists and dictators. That's not a bad statement. It says it all. And I'd like you to comment on it. Now, before we begin this discussion, I want to put things in context. Many of you don't know the history of trying terrorists or enemies. And I'd like to, give you a little background, because you're probably going to go off half-cocked, being that most of you are ignorant liberals who listen to talk radio and you think you know it all. But in fact, I do this for a living. My job is to prepare for the show. Your job is not to prepare for the show, but to get outraged and call. And so before you say a word, listen to what I'm about to tell you with regard to whether or not a terrorist like Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who masterminded the World Trade Center travesty, an abomination for that matter, should be tried in a military court or tried in New York City, as Obama and Eric Holder, the man, by the way, who released six Puerto Rican terrorists, who's our attorney general, believes he should be given all of the freedoms and the constitutional protections. And I've heard the girls from the ACLU expound on this. I've heard all of the ignoramuses from the far left expound on this. But what they are continuously avoiding is the history of such trials. I go back in time to 1941, 1942, when an avowedly more left-leaning president was in power named Franklin Delano Roosevelt. FDR was so far to the left, and when he could not get his way with the Supreme Court, he actually suggested that he add six more members of the Supreme Court himself so that he could have a kangaroo court. So if you think Obama's bad, you're right, but you have seen nothing yet, and nor do you know history. FDR was a radical dictator of the left. So even this leftist dictator, FDR, who many of you think was a saint, even he tried Nazi spies in a military court. The case is Quirin versus the United States government. I believe it's Q-U-A-R-I-N or Quirin, something along those lines. Search it on Google. In the Quirin case, Q-U-I-R-A-N, the government tried them in a military court. They were found here. They were dropped by a Nazi submarine. A civilian found them, turned them in, blah, blah, blah. They were all captured one after the other. They were given a military trial, and I believe most of them were hung or shot as a result of the military trial. They were not afforded a civilian trial because FDR knew that the Nazis would get a cockamamie, cockeyed, crazy lawyer from NYU, a self-hating moron from New York City, who the Nazis would have skinned alive to defend them. He knew that they'd get somebody who was so crackpot crazy that he could only become a lawyer or a judge. And so even FDR knew not to give the Nazis a trial in New York City, knowing the level of insanity of the American communist. And so he said, no, we're going to give them a military trial, which is all they're entitled to as enemy combatants. So therefore, I rest my case. If the far left president, FDR, was wise enough in the case of Nazi spies who were found in America to afford them not a civilian but a military trial, then why is Barack Hussein Obama, or Obawa, whichever you prefer, going out of his way, bending over backwards, catering to these rat bums who conducted such a massacre on our own soil. This is the Savage Nation. You know the phone number. You know the website. I got the callers. You got the answers. You're on the best radio show in the United States of America. Let's begin in my own hometown of San Francisco. Alan San Francisco, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello, Dr. Savage. It's a pleasure to listen to you again in the Redwood City area.
Thank you.
Basically, my comment is that you're 100% on. As always, I find you entertaining and thoroughly insightful, and I'm just grateful to have you back on. I was listening out of Sacramento. I had to plan on leaving work at a certain time so I could make sure I would catch you going over the hill there. So,
Make sure that when you hit the Altamont Pass, you turn the show off because you don't want your wife to hear my show as you pull into the driveway. No doubt she is a liberal who listens to NPR.
Unfortunately, you get right on the head like most.
Why do so many women, why are they so weak-minded that they listen to that left-wing pap on National Public Radio? Okay, you get a free copy of Band of Britain. Stay on the line. Let's go on to the next call. Let's go across the country to Jacob in New York City, WOR Country. Go ahead, Jacob. Your opinion, please.
Yes, Dr. Savage, first of all, I'm a longtime listener and admirer. I would like to share with you a very pertinent quote from the Talmud. The Talmud says that one who is merciful to those who deserve cruelty will end up being cruel to those who deserve mercy.
Well, as it is written, and so it is written. In other words, from time immemorial, whether you are a Muslim Arab or a Christian or a Jew or a Buddhist or a Hindu, we understand that this presidency is so out of line with history and reality that we are all in mortal danger.
Yes, sir.
And Jacob, repeat it again. If you are merciful to the cruel, how does it go?
If you are merciful to those who deserve cruelty, you'll end up being cruel to those who deserve mercy.
I should think that the Saudis would not afford Khalid Sheikh Mohammed a civilian trial with cockamamie crazy lawyers from the worst institutions in America, the institutions of lower living, such as Harvard and NYU.
Savage. Visit TRNCentral.com, your one stop for news and all things talk radio. That's TRNCentral.com.
Bing, it's the Savage Nation across America, around the world. We're talking about a number of things, and main thing is Obama's in trouble. We call him President Obama today, since he is genuflecting to dictators around the world. Today, there's a Senate primary in Illinois to fill those who want to sit in Obama's old stool. Joining us right now to talk about President Obama and the trouble he may be in is Charles Hurt, the New York Post D.C. bureau chief. Charles, welcome back to the Savage Nation. Your article says that Obama's in trouble. Of course, we know about Illinois, and I'm sorry, about New Jersey, Virginia, Massachusetts. But what else do you think is indicative of him being in trouble?
Well, I think that the outcome of the primary today in Illinois is going to be is almost certain to be a real problem for him. In the first place, the sitting governor. Looks like he's on the verge of being bounced out, and if that happens, it's just more of this rash of discontent that we've seen all across the country with people waiting for this change that they were promised and not getting it, and kind of having to take that change, out on their own.
Charles, you've covered a lot of, you've been around a long time. You've traveled in many campaigns since 01. You've covered national politics from Washington. You've covered one campaign after the other. Is Obama different in many, many ways? And if so, how?
Well, of course, before the election, he was different in that in my lifetime, I'd never seen a national candidate that could run a campaign like this and seem to do everything right, and by that I mean from a political standpoint. He was golden. Everything he touched turned to gold. Since he's become president, it has been a downward slide, and we are now at this point now where it's like the guy nothing he does is right. Everything he does seems to get his administration and Democrats further and further into deep trouble. to where I don't know how it's going to be possible for them to reverse this decline right now.
All right, he was Camelot in the beginning, and now he's become something else, maybe a camel's lot. But the question is why? What happened? Is it Rahm Emanuel? Who do you think power went to their mind? You know, the old Lord Acton thing, power corrupts, absolute power corrupts, absolutely. Do you think it's the absolute power that has corrupted the machine?
I think that has something to do with it, just because they weren't challenged in any way. And of course, you know, Republicans can be blamed for that, for having, you know, given away the keys to the kingdom at every level in Washington, and I would argue by failing to keep their promises to be, you know, to rein in the government and
absolutely
stewards of.
I agree. I mean, I was a strong critic of what Bush had done in the second term, the big government, the weakness in Iraq, et cetera. But Bush gave us a $1 trillion deficit. And now Obama comes and gives us a $3 trillion deficit. That's his idea of curing a deficit. I don't understand how anyone doesn't see through this. Now he's going to tax the middle class. That was a story that Reuters posted, Charles. You know that, and then withdrew. It was called backdoor taxes on the middle class. Did you see that little up and down from Reuters?
That was so amazing on so many levels, because not only does it show what the plans are, which are these crippling taxes, but then it also shows the extraordinary power this administration has to sort of bully people in the media business into you know, retracting stories. It was a perfectly good story. I read the whole thing. There was nothing wrong in it, but the Obama administration managed to browbeat Reuters into pulling it, and I think actually that has a big thing to do with what not only who Obama is, but also what we're seeing now. This is a guy who ran a campaign that was based on a whole lot of vague fluff. Honestly, I still to this day don't really know what all the hope and change was really promising. Now that we're actually seeing it in action, we're realizing that I don't think even they really knew, and because the media wasn't pressing.
But Charles, you know, let's look at Nancy Pelosi, who is basically his twin sister politically. Here is a woman who doesn't see what's going on around her, and she says after Massachusetts, she still says, we're going to get health care no matter what the American people say. If we have to go through the wall, we'll go through the wall. If we have to pole vault over, we'll pole vault over. If we have to parachute in, we'll parachute in. She had such passion for disrespecting the American people, and she has no passion for prosecuting the war in Afghanistan. If only they had the same passion against Al-Qaeda, the war would be over. What is wrong with their thinking, Charles?
I don't know. That was beyond crazy.
Did you hear that speech, the Pelosi speech that will parachute in if we have to? Did that sound crazy to you?
But also, I guess from covering her over the years, it didn't stand out because she's always saying sort of wild things like that. And President Obama, you know, to his credit, at least he realizes how crazy that is and claims to say something a little bit different. But I don't think that the Democrats in Congress have any better idea than President Obama does about where they go from here, what they do about the shambles that they have created after just a year of.
Look at who they pick for the Secretary of Homeland Security. Janet Napolitano, who doesn't even show up at a congressional hearing on the failures, the security failures. Is that a first, that such a high-level individual wouldn't even show up for Congress?
Yeah, that's especially this early in an administration. Sometimes, you know, in the eighth year of an administration, the administration starts, you know, sending in rain checks for things. But
yes,
not in the first year when the Congress is controlled by your own party. It's insane.
Yes. Well, listen, Charles, let's listen to Nancy Pelosi a few days ago. This is after Massachusetts, when she says to the American people, we'll do what we want. We don't care about you. Listen.
We go through the gate. The gate's closed. We'll go over the fence. The fence is too high. We'll pole vault in. If that doesn't work, we'll parachute in. But we're going to get health care reform passed for the American people, for their own personal health and economic security. and for the important role that it'll play in reducing the deficit.
First of all, it's a lie on every front. It's not going to reduce the deficit. It's going to increase it. Secondly, it's not about health care reform. You and I both know that it's stealing the health insurance industry for special interests that are tied into the Democrat machine. This no longer became health care reform. It became ripping off the health insurance industry and dividing the spoils amongst Democrat contributors. You know, that's the best I can figure out here. It's all about greed and money, Charles. I don't know whether you agree with that analysis.
And then of course, the special carve-outs for unions, for union members that have these Cadillac health plans.
Yes, and they're not going to be taxed on that, right?
Right, exactly. And then the refusal to go and to address some of the more egregious tort reform issues. But if you look at where Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats are right now in Congress, not only have they enraged most of America with this health scheme in the first place, but they have also managed to completely enrage their left flank because they have failed to get anything passed, even though they control every lever of power in this town. So basically, Democrats are going into the next election having enraged the other side and having done nothing to make their own side want to keep them around. They're headed into some very, very tough waters up ahead.
We're speaking with New York Post's D.C. bureau chief and news columnist Charles Hurd, who I read as often as I can. And your article is about Obama being in trouble. What struck me most about this is that he goes on the road before Massachusetts, before I think he went to New Jersey and Virginia, if I'm not mistaken, stumping for the candidates. And everywhere he goes, they lose. Is this unusual for a first-termer in the first year?
You remember when in the lowest moments of the Bush administration, when even Republicans were sick and tired of the Bush administration, President Bush could go into a state and campaign hard for somebody, and it would raise a ton of money, and it would bring out people, and they could get them over the hump more often than not. I don't believe President Obama went into Virginia because, remember, they slit Creed Eade's throat about a week before because they wanted to blame the disastrous campaign on Creed Eade and not have it be a reflection of the White House. But he did campaign hard in Massachusetts and in New Jersey. And I got to tell you, I've never seen anything like this. He's gone from the Midas touch to, you know, whatever the reverse.
What's the opposite of Midas? Maybe the Obama touch. Maybe you've coined a new phrase. Charles, you know, I just got a letter from Lieutenant Behenna's mother, and I think you may know something about what happened to him, where they're trying and they put him in Fort Leavenworth for something that allegedly occurred in Iraq, and they gave him a military trial, not a civilian trial. His mother writes me and says, "It is a sad day in our nation's history when we label a member of Al-Qaeda a victim and a United States soldier who defended himself against the terrorist a murderer." Do you think that trying Khalid Sheikh Mohammed in New York, where even Schumer is against this, is going to be one of the greatest mistakes Obama has ever made, him and Holder?
I think in the end, I think he finally makes official the decision not to do that because I think that it would wind up being such a disaster. And quite frankly, I wouldn't be surprised if, when all is said and done, they don't move all this stuff right back down to Gitmo.
But why are so many liberals in favor of affording Khalid Sheikh Mohammed all of the protections of the U.S. Constitution when he's not a U.S. citizen, all of the legal protections of a system that they try to destroy? Do they not understand that even FDR tried Nazi spies, as I was saying earlier, in the Curran case in a military tribunal? Do they not know their own legal history?
I honestly don't think that many of them even really think about it that much. And I know that, you know, in terms of close personal friends who are very liberal, when you have these conversations with them, they quickly realize that you're talking sense and don't defend these crazy talking points that a lot of the sort of liberal...
What, that we've got to show the world that we're better than them, we're America, we've got to be a shining light to the world, and all of that. posturing that you'd hear in the fifth grade from a teacher. No, I understand that, but the best answer to me is the Quirin case in FDR, in FDR's administration. He certainly didn't afford Nazi spies a civilian trial. He gave them a military tribunal, and five out of eight of them were hung or shot. Charles Hurt, keep up the great work. Tonight's going to be another watershed primary in Illinois. One note before you go. Today, Republicans are likely to pick Representative Mark Kirk, an experienced centrist, and the Democrats are going to pick Alex Giannoulias. Tell the listeners who Alex Giannoulias is. I know he's an Obama pal, but why is he a bad figure?
Well, he's also the son of his family. He's a banker. His family has a bank there in Chicago that was the source of all of those stories that would sort of get off the ground a little bit and then lose steam in the media for ties to the mob, of course, and also ties to Tony Rezko, who was the character who gave that very strange and lucrative home sale, sold property to the President and Mrs. Obama at a rate that was extremely favorable, so that they made a hefty profit off of it.
And that's what the Democrats are going to pick to run against Kirk in Illinois. You say that things are so bad that even in Obama's alleged birthplace in Hawaii, I noticed the word alleged, Republicans are seriously talking about winning the House seat being vacated by a Democrat who wants to run for governor. You then say the only place where Obama has roots that don't seem to be sick and tired of him these days is Kenya. And you conclude by saying, don't be surprised if Republicans start fielding candidates in Kenya soon. Well, I understand that you are not a big fan of Obama, Charles Hurt. And I certainly appreciate your being straightforward. You're a columnist, not a reporter. And I'm a commentator, not a reporter. And I appreciate you being on the Savage Nation very much.
Thank you for having me, Michael.
Thank you very much. Well, there it is, Charles Hurt, New York Post. I read him every day. He writes very well. Sure, I agree with his opinion. Sure, my bias is the same as his bias, because we're right. My bias is the same as his bias. We're always right. By the way, I just got an email from Lieutenant Behenna's mother, Vicky. I can't read you the whole thing, but many of you sent a lot of money to him. He is the Army Ranger who was serving 15 years in Leavenworth, Kansas, for a crime he did not commit. All the while, the Obama administration is affording civilian rights to Al-Qaeda. This poor Army Ranger, a real hero, is rotting in prison in Fort Leavenworth. His parents had to mortgage their house to defend him. And here's what happened as a result of my featuring this on the Savage Nation. Dear Dr. Savage, writes Mrs. Behenna, Vicky, since you first began discussing Michael's case, we have received approximately $40,000 in donations to his legal defense fund. That does not include the $10,000 you sent from your legal defense fund. For that, we are truly grateful. I should add, we sent another $12,000 over the weekend, so it's 40 plus 22. And then she goes on. And I will post this letter, this heartbreaking letter, this really heartbreaking letter from Vicky Behenna, because many of you cannot understand why an Army Ranger will have been given 15 years in Fort Leavenworth while the Obama administration is affording the word victim to Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. I'll be right back on the Savage Nation. Hello, infidels. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. All right, all you infidels, put down your peg pants. How can you put down peg pants? I love that drum riff. Okay, turn it off. Here's the thing. I just got a letter from, you ready for this? Because you're not going to believe it. You know, this is going to be the biggest year of my life. I think 09 was a nightmare with the ban in Britain and everything else I had to put up with from the radical communist socialist left and all of the Shakespearean hell that they inflicted upon me. But I believe that 2010 is going to be a good year for me. And I just got a letter from the Washington Times. Dear Mr. Savage, the biggest night in the town for the hundreds of editors and reporters in Washington is, as you may know, the annual dinner of the White House Correspondents Association, which honors the president, the first lady, and our guests. It's a rare opportunity for good conversation and splendid entertainment. for the correspondents and their guests, who are the stars of the Congress, the administration, the courts, the media, and the world of sports and entertainment. Savage, we want you to join us as a special guest at the Washington of the Washington Times on Saturday, May 1. The black tie dinner will be at the Washington Hilton Hotel, beginning with a reception at 6 p.m. and followed by dinner at 7:30. The President and Mrs. Obama will both be there. We know you will enjoy the event, and we look forward to having you as our guest, which will make the occasion particularly special for us to RSVP, blah, 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 blah. Mr. Bryant of a certain institution at the Washington Times. Yes, I'm going to go. God willing, I will be there. God willing, I will go to the White House Correspondents Association, which honors the stars of the Congress, the administration, the courts, the media, and the world of sports and entertainment. Since I am the real superstar of talk radio, not in numbers, but of course in intensity and quality, I have to be there. And so I will go. I have meant to go for many a year. Of course, I had not been invited, but this is one I can't say no to. Remember, it was May 5th, 2009, that the labor socialist communists of Britain lumped me in with murderers and terrorists, where even the ACLU took my side. Even Muslim front groups such as CARE took my side. And, of course, the U.S. government has not taken my side. It's very interesting. And I think that I should be there. It'll be a lot of I like Washington, D.C. I go to the National Aeronautics and Space Museum. I go to the museum, the art museum. And that's about, I have relatives over there. I haven't been there in years, but I'm going to go. It's an excuse. May is a good time to fly. All right, here we go. Let's take the callers. 1-800-449-8255. San Francisco West, fire away. You're on the Savage Nation. 860 on the dial in San Francisco. What's on your mind?
I just want to let you know I'm in Placerville, California, 150 miles away, and 860 is coming in loud and
clear. Oh, my God. I told you this is a flamethrower that's going to burn down the towers of the meek little other talk stations in San Francisco. Yes. West, stay in the line. You win a free copy of Band in San Francisco by Michael Savage.
Savage. Visit TRNCentral.com, your one stop for news and all things talk radio. That's TRNCentral.com.
Warning: The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Certified by independent groups as the most transparent White House in history. It's important to understand. We are the first White House since the founding of the Republic to list every visitor that comes into the White House online so that you can look it up. So we've actually followed through on a lot of the commitments that we've made, and so Warren's mistaken in terms of how he characterized it.
Oh, yes, I'm the great pretender.
Barack Hussein Obama, as Holden Caulfield, the perennial outsider, the adolescent. Everyone is wrong but him. The voters are especially stupid. They don't just understand it. They don't get it. He gets everything because he's so much smarter than everybody. At least that's what the white liberals have told him from the time of his birth in Hawaii. And he doesn't understand that he himself has been victimized by liberalism, but that's a long story. In this hour, I'd like to talk about all the topics I touched on in the last hour, plus a new one. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. But I caution you, you cannot get into the tent today, the large tent of the Savage Nation. It's a sort of a revival movement every day on the program. And we have this monster tent across America, and people come in. And sometimes it's busier than others. Right now, there's a long line around the block trying to get into the tent. people are peeking underneath the corners of the tent because they want to hear what's going on. They want to know why the show is so popular despite every obstacle thrown at the man. How does he keep going? What keeps him going? Who is he? What motivates him? What makes Sammy run? And boy, oh boy, even though I don't like him politically, I sure like him personally. Or actually, I'm starting to think I like him politically because I never heard anybody express things that way. Or something along the lines of, I've been brainwashed all my life until Savage came along. Or something along the lines of, God, I had no idea it was that bad until you actually showed me the truth. Something along those lines. And so therefore, I would like to talk about pornography versus art for a moment. Now, the reason I want to do this is because I grew up on several magazines. When I was young, I loved Boy's Life. I loved Flying Magazine. Things like that when I was a kid. Dreamer. I probably also snuck a peek at my father's Argosy magazine. It was a men's magazine. It's such a thing called men's magazine. Argosy. I mean, I was probably looking for a naked girl in there, but it was always about, I don't know, hunting or something, guys in checked shirts. I have no idea what it was. But it said Argosy and men read it who smoked Chesterfields or something like that, you know, without filters. I read it. I didn't get much out of it. But then when I became a teenager, I chose my own magazines. I liked Rodent Track and Playboy. In fact, I grew up on Rodent Track and Playboy. Now, the reason I mention these magazines is because people confuse pornography. They don't understand what pornography is and what it is not. Playboy was not truly pornographic in those days because it idealized the female form. But you have to remember that societies have idealized the human form from time immemorial. All you have to do is look at the ancient Greek statues and the statues that they idealized, both male and female. Or look at Michelangelo's David. Were these pornographic images? Of course not. Such statues would only be pornographic to throwbacks or fascists. They're not pornographic. And the reason the Greek statues were not pornographic or Michelangelo's David was not pornographic is because although the human form was shown in the nude form, they idealized the human form. They did not trivialize the human form or debase the human form or mock the human form or defile the human form. Now enters the next phase. All of that changed when Larry Flint, the sickest mind of his generation, in my opinion, introduced Hustler magazine. I remember when it came along, I took one look at one issue and threw it away and never looked at it again. Why? Because it was gynecological. It was debasing. It was the humiliation and debasement of women. It was not the glorification and idealization of the female form. And my friends at the Savage Nation, that is the difference between pornography and art. I'm Michael Savage, and I agree with the monologue, which I wrote. Now play some rock and roll, and I'll take some calls on... Maybe I should go to the correspondence dinner in a Jaguar with Larry Flint's old girlfriend. Whoever she might be. Did he ever have one? Hefner, 90 years old. Still hobbling along on Viagra. Worked for him. Guess he doesn't believe in the next world. He had enough fun in this world. What does he need the next world for? What if you live your whole life for the next world and there isn't one? Man, that's a real horrible thought. Like you did everything, didn't do this. No, can't do it because this is only one short step in eternity. And eternity is a very long period of time and I'll be rewarded in the next world. And boom, there is no next world. But you see, here's the thing. So if there is no next world, you don't lose anything in a way because you won't know that you denied yourself. You see, this is the interesting thing. It's better to do the right thing because... this is what you got to figure out. Even from a cynical point of view, it's better to believe in the hereafter. I'll tell you why. You can come to God from a cynical point of view as well, if only you listen to me. Let's say you're a devout atheist. There is no God. Ha, ha, ha. Only throwback schmucks believe in God. I'm smart. I live in San Francisco. That's what they think they know everything. Okay, so they don't believe in God. They're godless. Eyeless in Gaza or eyeless in San Francisco. It doesn't really matter. They're still eyeless and godless. So they say, we don't believe in it. That's only for rubes, backwards people, blah, blah, blah. Okay. So they say, okay, I'm going to do whatever I want. I'm going to act it out here. I really don't care. I'm never going to be punished unless I'm caught by the police. So they die and there is no next world. So they don't get punished or rewarded. Or they die and there is a next world. And they go before God. And he says, well, you gambled and you lost. So here's what's going to happen. You're going to come back as a bug. You're going to come back as a fly. You're going to come back as Obama. You're going to come back as Larry Flynt. You're going to come back as a tuna fish in a can. Whatever you're going to come back as, if you believe in that. So you get punished. So if you do the right thing and you go before God and there is a God, so you get rewarded. If you do the right thing and there is no next world, then you don't lose anything. So therefore, you may as well do the right thing, boys and girls in the Savage Nation. So whichever way you look at it, you may as well do the right thing the best you can. That's how I see it. Whether you do it from a higher level, you know, from a higher motivation or lower motivation, it doesn't really matter. But, you know, when you break it right down, what it comes down to is that decent people want to do decent things either way. It doesn't matter about the next world or this world. Because don't confuse yourself for 1 minute. I met a lot of religious people. They wore the garb and they did the holy rolling and the, you know, the mumbo jumbo. And they were the meanest, thievingest SOBs I ever met in my life. And frankly, I've met some atheists who weren't such bad people. So it depends upon the person at the end of the day. Now let's go on to some people in the news. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Again, I'd like to welcome all of you from across America to the Savage Nation. Let's go to Kevin in New York on WOR. Kevin, you're on the Savage Nation. Hello, infidel.
Yes, Michael. All we need to know in terms of where the Obama-Tola sympathies lie is once the underwear bomber pressed the detonator into the underwear, literally kissing his ass goodbye, he was a terrorist. He was an enemy combatant. He is not a criminal, a suspect. He does not get Ben Matlock. He gets Jack Bauer.
Why? Why is Obama bending over backwards with the attorney general, the man who released six Puerto Rican terrorists during his reign of terror as an assistant attorney general under Clinton? Why are they so friendly to terrorists? Why do they bend over backwards to grant them every protection of the law, but they prosecute U.S. soldiers as though they're enemy combatants?
Here's the kicker, Michael. If, God forbid, the bomb had killed everybody on the plane and they put it back together piece by piece in the hangar, do you actually believe that the left would have accepted the official explanation, Michael?
No.
Of course they would.
They would have said the Jews did it.
They said, oh, you're
the radical left, including leftist Jews, would have said that Mossad did it.
You're blaming it on the black guy, even though he was sitting in 19A over the main fuel tank next to a woman holding a baby. They would have said, you're blaming it on a black guy. Now, Michael, the terrorists did that intentionally. These guys are so smart, Michael.
What do you mean? He was sitting in 19A over a fuel. He knew where to sit. He even got a seat over the fuel tank.
Yeah, main fuel tank next to a woman holding a baby. And the point is that
there's another point. Look, first of all, I agree with you. We know that there's no reason to give him all of the protections of an American civilian trial. This is a left-wing insanity. I heard from this left-wing insanity all my life. I used to hear it in New York from the communists who would say, I'd rather that 99 guilty people go free than one guilty man. You've heard it, haven't you?
Well,
that one guilty man should be found guilty. I'd rather see 99 guilty men go free. So my answer to them used to be, really? But there'd be 99 guilty people committing crimes out there, stupid. Well, what's wrong with American communists from New York who vote for Schumer? What is wrong with them? You're personally responsible for them, Kevin. You live in that city.
Yes, yeah, Michael, you know, I just want to say that the Al-Qaeda is so smart. They picked that guy deliberately for that reason. We would have had Al Sharpton marches. Charles Barron would have been out there saying it was racist conspiracy. We're in trouble, Michael. We're in big trouble.
That's because we have a president named Obama. He bows down to terrorists and he gives the middle finger to the American voter. Thanks for listening on the WOR out of New York City. That's all. Let's move on. What was on my mind? Something came and went. Well, there's another story that's so agitating, I'm afraid to read it to you. There's only so much I can take. So let's take the callers. It's easier. Okay, San Francisco, 860 on the dial. Elliot, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please. Bingo, a hang-up job. Next, go to the next one. Rick in San Francisco, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Actually, I'm in Humboldt County, and I'm listening to you on your station all the way up here by Eureka.
You're kidding. Well, how many miles away from San Fran is that?
That's about 270 miles.
Wow. I told you it's 50,000 powerful watts.
Yeah, well, if we get a station up here locally that has you on, but I thought I'd switch over and see if you were coming through, and you're booming.
Yeah, well, I'm on an all-sports station, you know, Rick, 860, and people are just finding out about it. But a big, you know, a big TV campaign starts in 2 weeks. I cut the commercials yesterday wearing sunglasses. It should be a lot of fun. You win a free copy of Band in San Francisco by Michael Savage. Let's go to San Diego, where Michael disagrees with me on something. Michael, go ahead. You're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Alex. I was hearing what you said about FDR, and FDR was one of the greatest presidents. He pulled us out of the Depression by creating...
All right, let's put aside that debate, which we can argue about. But my point was a little different. It was that this left-wing socialist president, FDR, also had a problem with people who wanted to harm Americans, and he gave them military trials, not a civilian trial. Did you hear that part of my soliloquy?
Everybody that is convicted or arrested for a crime deserves to be Mirandized. They deserve.
Oh, wait, Michael, you're not answering me. You just went to your first point, and you're trying to hammer it because you lost already. You lost the chess game. Why won't you answer a simple point? You say FDR was great. We disagree on that. But even this great leftist FDR did not afford them the Miranda rights and a civilian trial. He gave them a military trial. Why is that, Michael?
Well, these Al-Qaeda operatives are not a representative of any specific country. They can be in Syria. They can be in Iraq.
Well, why are you defending them? Why do you take their side? Why do you bend over backwards? Why do you sympathize with them?
The only trouble is
why do you sympathize with Al-Qaeda? Why do you hate American soldiers and sympathize with Al-Qaeda, Michael? Was it your mother who was the communist? Or was it the fact that your father brainwashed you? Why is it that you left-wing ACLU types have nothing but sympathy for the devil and nothing but hatred for the American police and military? How did this happen to you? What did it to you?
Corrupt. The military is corrupt.
How did you become so twisted and corrupted? Were you molested by an uncle who was a Republican?
Well, I was.
Have a nice day, you stupid piece of... Don't get me started. I'll smash the microphone. I'm trying not to get angry. I took that caller just to let you know what exists out there. I wanted you to see the kind of twisted minds that put Barack Hussein Obama in power. You understand this? They have sympathy for Al-Qaeda. They say they should get Mirandized. They say they should be given a civilian trial. And they have nothing but hatred for the U.S. military and for the police. We have no idea what trouble we are in until we actually look at the face of the enemy within. Unfortunately, they're running the country today. You understand this? Austin, Texas. Don, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead. Oh, I have to go to a break. I'll be right back.
Savage.
We are talking about the muddled presidency of Barack Hussein Obama. On the program. Here's another one just came up on Drudge from Las Vegas. President Obama again criticizes trips to Las Vegas, saying when times are tough, you tighten your belts. You don't go buying a boat when you can barely pay your mortgage. You don't blow a bunch of cash on Vegas when you're trying to save for college. That's very interesting, but apparently Harry Reid didn't like that. Even Harry Reid, who's running for his life, said, the president needs to lay off Las Vegas and stop making it the poster child for where people shouldn't be spending their money. Las Vegas is suffering through one of the highest unemployment rates in the country. We cannot afford for the president to bring us down any further, added Republican Senator John Ensign. Well, somebody should have told him that the way to begin tightening your belt is in the White House. As you well know, Michelle has the largest number of staff in the history of the First Lady. Oh, yeah, something like 138. I don't see her tightening her belt, do you? Well, how about the president abusing Air Force One with more trips in a shorter period of time than any president in the history of the country? It's as though he, wow, here's Air Force One, man. Let's go around the world as often as possible. What fun. Look at that. They think I'm president. Way cool. Remember the first few months? He looked like an infant going up the steps, and he looked so tentative and like, I can't believe I pulled this one. How did this happen? I cannot believe this. Remember, he looked, I don't believe this. Now it's like, oh, yeah, well, I'm president, so absolute power corrupts absolutely. And man, am I going to enjoy this. Let's fly me to the moon on Air Force One, and we'll bring Air Force Two and Three for Michelle's baggage and staff. And if you feel I'm being unfair, check it out for yourself. You'll find out that I'm being extremely fair. and you're the one who's imbalanced.
Savage.
Visit TRNCentral.com, your one stop for news and all things talk radio. That's TRNCentral.com.
I'm going to trace the long arc between the character and the catcher in the rye, Holden Caulfield, and Barack Obama, who is still playing the outsider even though he's the president. You see, J.D. Salinger died, and he wrote The Catcher in the Rye. You may not have heard of him, but his book, which was published in 1951, it was written in 1945, is still selling 250,000 copies a year. It's still taught in colleges, and there's a reason for it. A couple of years ago, or a year ago, I actually reviewed The Catcher in the Rye for the Savage Nation. It's not just me reading from it. I didn't just read it. I actually would read and stop and analyze what I was saying and why it's so important. And I'm going to trace, as I say, the long arc between the character and The Catcher in the Rye, the immortal teenage protagonist, the twisted, rebellious Holden Caulfield, who was the predecessor of the beatnik of the 50s, then the hippie of the 60s, and then the progressives of today, who continue to see themselves as working against the system or working against the man. And it leads us right up to Barack Obama still playing the outsider, even though he's president. What Barack Obama did was frightening. I don't know if you actually understood the psychology of Obama. If you actually could understand what he did, forget the individual policy statements that he made. Some of them were so obscure that they have only circulated in underground college publications, what Obama said. The man proposed things that are only proposed in obscure college publications. I think this man has no concept of limitations, either his own or of the government. And as such, Obama places us all in danger. Furthermore, the speech was full of bluster and bombast, unctuous in tone, condescending in spirit. We the people didn't understand health care. We the people didn't understand budgets. We the people don't understand the Supreme Court's decision. We're the idiots, and he's brilliant. The community organizer is brilliant. Brilliant. This was an arrogant and awful demonstration of the ability of a delusional man to blame everyone. Even the left thinks it was muddled. Obama did not have a coherent philosophy. The theme of his speech was, I don't quit. It had nothing to do with America, did it? This tin pot dictator from Chicago thinks that he is the supreme leader and he is superior to other branches of government. The man is a clear and present danger to the survival of this republic, in case you don't know it. Now, any Democrat listening to this show would understand what the Constitution says, separation of powers, not a supreme dictator. So when he attacks the Supreme Court in front of the Congress, and the gang of Democrats stand up behind the Supreme Court members, all of whom sat still, stone-faced, including the liberals, such as Ruth Bader Ginsburg, she didn't get up and say, thank you, President. She understood what a slap in the face it was to the institution, the Supreme Court. The man, as I told you, is Junior Doc Obama, and he'd like to become a full-blown Papa Doc Obama, and the only people who can stop him are you. The man is a danger. Pelosi is an out-of-control egomaniac. 20% of the American people want health care reform, most of whom are illegal aliens or are going to profit from it directly. 20% of the people really don't know what it means for them, and approximately 60% of them said, do not destroy the greatest medical system on earth. And yet Pelosi, in a fright wig, gets up and says, we're going to do it. We're going to vault over. We're going to parachute in, drop dead people. We don't care. So now how did we get here? How did we wind up with this arrogant adolescent Obama in the presidency? How did this happen? Little did I know that I'd wake up, read The Catcher in the Rye, author J.D. Salinger, you know, would die. He's 91 years old, dies at 91. God bless him. I hope I live that long. Son says he died of natural causes at his home. He lived for decades in self-imposed isolation in the small remote house in Cornish, New Hampshire. And as I say, he wrote The Catcher in the Rye. And I want to show you the long arc between The Catcher in the Rye, that is Holden Caulfield and Barack Obama, who is still playing the outsider, who is still playing, in essence, the teenage protagonist, the twisted, rebellious Holden Caulfield in the presidency. From the beatnik to the hippie to the progressive and the savage nation. But I want to read you a few pieces from The Catcher in the Rye. I still have my edition. It's falling apart. I have a paperback Signet book edition, 50 cents. Not the rap artist who probably has never read a book. but he's done very well indeed, because that's America today. But Salinger wrote the book in 1945, and it was published in 1953 by Little Brown and Company. And so, anyway, he writes this book, and it's about this character, this college guy, goes to a prep school, rich kid, and he's, you know, he's kind of alienated. The character is an alienated character, and he doesn't really know what he is and what he wants to be. And I'm going to go to page 57, and he goes to this cheap hotel room in Manhattan. They gave me this very crummy room with nothing to look out of the window at except the other side of the hotel, he writes. I didn't care much. I was too depressed to care whether I had a good view or not. Now, let me pause right there. He said, I was too depressed to care whether I had a good view or not. Remember, he wrote this in 1945. This was the first post-war book about an alienated character that I know of. He predated characters in the movie such as Montgomery Clift. Do you understand the characters I'm talking about? The outsider, the guy who was in the undershirt smoking, looking in from the outside. He predated a guy like Frank Sinatra's Italian guy, the little guy who fought until he got killed by the big guy. Remember that character? He played that character. He wrote about them. So he's in a cheap hotel, no view. He says, I don't care. I was too depressed to care whether I had a good view or not. The bellboy that showed me to the room was this very old guy around 65. I'm laughing for a reason. He was even more depressing than the room was. He was one of those bald guys that comb all their hair over from the side to cover up the baldness. I'd rather be bald than do that. Anyway, what a gorgeous job for a guy around 65 years old, carrying people's suitcases and waiting around for a tip. I suppose he wasn't too intelligent or anything, but it was terrible anyway. Now, this is, again, Salinger writing through his character, Holden Caulfield. And the kid now goes on, the character says this. After he left, I looked out the window for a while with my coat on and all. I didn't have anything else to do. You'd be surprised what was going on the other side of the hotel. They didn't even bother to pull their shades down. I saw one guy, a gray-haired, very distinguished-looking guy with only his shorts on, do something you wouldn't believe me if I told you. First, he put his suitcase on the bed. Then he took out all these women's clothes and he put them on. Real women's clothes, silk stockings, high-heeled shoes, brassiere, and one of those corsets with the straps hanging down and all. Then he put on this very tight black evening dress, I swear to God. Then he started walking up and down the room, taking these very small steps, the way a woman does, and smoking a cigarette and looking at himself in the mirror. He was all alone, too, unless somebody was in the bathroom. I couldn't see that much. Then in the window, almost right over his, I saw a man and a woman squirting water out of their mouths at each other. Now, I want to pause right here. This was very, very risky for 1951. You see the topics he touched on through the character, the alienated character? And what was Salinger trying to say through his character, Holden Caulfield? That the kid was mixed up and alienated because society was mixed up and alienated. Already America had had the big crack-up. I am again going to make connections between the long arc that connects the character and the catcher in the rye and Barack Obama still playing the outsider, still playing the alienated teenager, even though he is the president. From beatnik to hippie to progressive to the savage nation.
Savage.
All right, welcome back to the Savage Nation. If you get a comment on that or pornography versus art or civilian versus military trials for Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and other vermin of the planet, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. You are listening to the one and only Savage Nation. Let's begin this set of calls on the West Coast in San Francisco. Jennifer, welcome to the program. Thanks for listening. I'm my new affiliate, 860 on the dial. What's on your mind?
Hey, Michael. The reason why Obama is so hard bent on putting these enemy combatants in civil trials is because he knows the legal community is completely obsessed with stare decisis and precedent. And most of the precedent right now, which most of it comes from World War II, shows that military tribunals would be the appropriate place.
That's right. Again, I will keep quoting it until everyone gets it drummed in their head. FDR, the most leftist president before Obama, even he used the military tribunal to try Nazi criminals found here in America. He did not afford them the dignity nor the protections of the U.S. Constitution. So why is Obama even to the left of FDR? And why is the American left sympathetic with al-Qaeda? Did you hear that caller a few calls ago who actually had sympathy for them saying they should be Mirandized, they deserve all protections? Why do they have such sympathy for al-Qaeda? I believe they are the fifth column. I believe they're seditious. And I believe we need a reinstitution of the House American Activities Committee, the House Un-American Activities Committee, where a person's patriotism is called before a tribunal. That would clean the House up pretty good. That would clean the clock of the American left, the wobblies who have been undermining us for the last 50 years.
Absolutely. And if he doesn't do this, he knows by doing this, he will change the precedent of the precedents in this country as giving them constitutional rights and trying them in civilian courts.
But why are so many left-wingers sympathetic to al-Qaeda who would kill them as well? Why?
I think it comes from the white guilt, the white hate, the anyone's in power, you're bad movement of the 60s.
Yes, it is the 60s, the sickies, the movement of the sickies. The fact of the matter is, when I did this thing on Obama going back to the outsider Holden Caulfield, many people on the left still see themselves as the little guy fighting the system, when in fact they're the system fighting the little guy.
They're brainwashed to believe that government is the answer and not that government is the problem. That is the problem.
Now, you're not a young attorney, are you, Jennifer?
I'm actually in my last year of law school right now.
Oh, I suspected something to do with a conservative law student. How did you get through? Where do you go? Not to Bolt, I hope.
Oh, no. Unfortunately, I go to Santa Clara, which was a Jesuit Catholic university, which is completely overtaken by liberal insanity. Every professor.
Yes. How have the Catholic institutions been so propagandized and penetrated by people who hate religion and God and Jesus? How is that possible? I mean, I know that Jesus said, love thy enemy as thyself. And I truly understand that. It's taken me my whole life, even though I'm not Christian. I really understand what that means, Jennifer. It's actually a relief to love thy enemy as thyself because you don't hate, but you still understand who they are. But how have they taken over the universities to the extent that they've destroyed the essence of Catholicism?
I have to say it's probably the makeup of the universities. I went to a Catholic undergraduate institution for college as well, and every single professor there was espousing progressive, far-left agendas. And
See, the universities have erected a wall, basically like the Eastern European blocs used to have a wall. And this wall prohibits anyone with conservative views from entering the universities unless they are in the sciences, which have basically, to a certain extent, not totally, been left alone. They will permit people with conservative views to go into chemistry or physics. But even there, the university has erected a wall where only liberal doxy is permitted, which is why we're winding up with such faulty science, such as the fake global warming data, for example. But Jennifer, how are you going to get a law degree in a place like that?
Shockingly enough, I just wrote a very controversial paper about the progressive movement in law school, and it was accepted with a smirk, but it was accepted, and hopefully I'll be able to make it out here in California.
Isn't that wonderful? Well, I wish you the best of luck, and I'm glad you're listening to me on my new station, 860. I'm sending you a free copy of Band in San Francisco, so stay on the line. Sacramento, Gary, you have something to say. Go ahead, please. What's that?
Yeah, Dr. Savage.
Yes.
I overheard you briefly saying that you were going to attend a gathering, a political gathering.
Well, it's the number one media dinner in the world, in America. You know, the big one every year, the correspondence dinner in Washington that the president will be at. Why would you think I shouldn't attend?
You being such a political force and such a beacon of truth in this crazy, whacked-out political world of ours, I've seen many things happen. And as you know, crazy things have happened in places like this.
And well, you're right. I didn't think about that. I could bring a canary as a food taster. I could bring Teddy to be my food taster, but then I'm liable to lose a dog.
I'm just, you know.
No, I understand. No, I know we're dealing with absolute criminals running the country. They could give me a polonium sushi. I know that.
You know?
You're raising a very good point. I'm actually thinking about it. Safety would dictate I should be very careful about going to the National Correspondents' Dinner. I don't know who's in the kitchen.
Well,
they could know exactly what table who ordered what.
Exactly. And what kind of food you might be served.
No, let alone, wait, you want to get paranoid? Forget the food. How do I know who's going to assure me my safety in the city of Washington?
Absolutely correct. And you know what, Mr. Savage? Please be careful, because you, I don't think sometimes you realize how important you are to America's future. And how.
Well, Gary, listen, I'm one of several, not many. I'm one of several, not many. Gary, were you in law enforcement, without going into detail? Were you in some federal capacity?
No, but, you know, that's my only one regret, is that I didn't join the military and I didn't serve law.
Well, you have a suspicious mind, which is the first prerequisite to becoming a good agent of the government, for sure. But I do take your advice with consideration, and I will certainly avoid any sushi that might be radioactive. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Right, so Obama's on the attack. He's attacking the Republican Party because they oppose him. He would like a one-party system where, like the liberals of Hawaii who put him in power, they'll bow down to him. But the world doesn't work that way. We live in a two-party system, whether you like it or not. But we actually live in a three-party system. There's a Democrat Party, the Republican Party, and then there's the ACLU, which has elected itself as a third party, even though they're the most seditious group that America has ever seen. Even though the ACLU is undermining the military at every turn, the police at every turn, the schools at every turn, the churches at every turn, even though if we lived in a sane nation, the ACLU would be disbanded under RICO statutes, their assets seized, and, of course, the principals of the ACLU put in prison for the damage they have done and continue to do to this country. Laborers sue California City over a ban on seeking work. I'm going to read this to you. Day laborers, that means illegal aliens, sued a Southern California city claiming a ban on seeking work on the street violates their civil rights. Now, let's stop with that sentence. They have no civil rights. They're not American citizens. But that doesn't stop the vermin in the ACLU from claiming such. The lawsuit filed against Costa Mesa in U.S. District Court comes after police, dressed in plain clothes, posed as employers in September, and arrested a dozen workers, sparking the ire of immigrant rights groups. They're not immigrants, they're illegal aliens. It's the latest in a series of lawsuits filed by day labor advocates against California cities that limit workers' rights to solicit employment on street corners. Everything about this article from the Associated Press is perverted and twisted. Advocates in the ACLU said illegal alien laborers have a constitutional right to free speech, and cities cannot bar them from seeking employment and simultaneously let activists wave signs against the Iraq war. See, they're lumping apples with oranges. You can wave signs against the Iraq war, can't you, if you're an American citizen? What does that have to do with day laborers from Mexico or El Salvador? Belinda Escobosa, a staff attorney for the despicable, un-American, seditious, dangerous ACLU of Southern California, told this to reporters.
Our core constitutional principles of equality and freedom demand that a day laborer enjoy the same right to free expression as a political activist or a member of a charitable group, she shrieked.
What you don't know is that the ACLU has been suing one city after another. It is the eighth such lawsuit filed in California by the dangerous, seditious ACLU and Mexican American Legal Defense and Education Fund, that is the seditious MALDEF, over such ordinances in the last 12 years. The previous lawsuits by the vermin in the ACLU have been settled or been won by the ACLU. One was appealed and is pending a ruling by the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Schlemiels. The lawsuit comes as day laborer advocates, that's illegal alien invaders, said they have seen more American citizens lining up at labor centers around the country because of the recession. So in other words, in addition to stealing your jobs, they're stealing your money through the ACLU. I'm going to close this hour by demanding that we have a resurgence, actually a reinstitution, rather, of the House Un-American Activities Committee.
Savage.
Visit TRNCentral.com, your one stop for news and all things talk radio. That's TRNCentral.com.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Well, today we talked about this story. Obama's got real trouble at home with Charles Hurd of the New York Post. But you can read about it and all the other stories I want to mention right now on michaelsavage.com. Today in Illinois, by the way, voters go to the polls poised to send another stinging message to their adopted son, Obama. He's in big trouble. First Democratic governors who fell in New Jersey and Virginia, then Scott Brown, who won in Massachusetts. Now, Illinois is about to send another rebuke to Chairman Obama. But Obama has not learned from history. First two major political defeats, and he's unlikely to learn from this one as well. Why? He's a narcissist. He lives in his own world, and his advisors are not doing him a favor. This is connected to the following article, which is conservative surges to within 2 points in Illinois governor race. Now, the midstream media may not be tuned into Adam Andrzejewski, but the internet sure is. If everything goes as people think, the media is going to follow. Republicans in Illinois will pick Representative Mark Kirk, an inexperienced centrist, as their candidate for Obama's old Senate seat. And Democrats will pick Alexei Giannoulias, an Obama pal whose family owns a bank, who has shady ties, and who ran a financial company that's in the process of collapsing. It looks like Obama's set to take another flop here. From Newsweek, religious centrists bail on Obama. Did you see that story? Black clergy is saying that the White House is patronizing and condescending, especially to black clergy. How would you feel if you were a centrist or conservative black clergy member who supported Obama and then saw him turn as far left as he could possibly go? Wouldn't you feel betrayed? Wouldn't you feel taken for granted? This is what is happening to Obama's base. It's not just conservatives. It's people who strongly supported Obama at one time. The Bible says pride cometh before a fall. Obama was proud of his plan for socialized medicine, but now he and his poll numbers are falling very, very quickly. You must see the picture on my website of Obama.
That's a good one.
I've come up with a name by accident, Barack Hussein Obama. Isn't that good, Beowulf?
That's excellent. A Freudian slip, but appropriate.
Barack Obama bows to Tampa Mayor. President Obama met Tampa Mayor Pam Iorio at MacDill Air Force Base Thursday, and he's caught again bowing to someone, and I mean at the waist. He bowed to the King of Saudi Arabia, he bowed to the Emperor of Japan, and now he's done it to the Mayor of Tampa. Do you think that there's a psychological condition that causes Obama to do this? I don't really know. I mean, does it have to do with his relationship with his mother? As this time he even bowed to a woman, to a mayor? The President of the U.S. bowing to a mayor? Would you please put Obama on the couch and tell me what you think is going on in President Obama's head? Now, there's another one that you have to see. Canadian province premier comes to the United States. Guess what for? Not for beef. Not for French fries. Nope, but for surgery. That's right. A Canadian premier from the province of Newfoundland and Labrador is set to undergo heart surgery this week in the United States. Now, why would he not have heart surgery in Canada, if Canada is said to have the best health care in the world, according to Obama, the president? I guess when it comes to matters of life and death, even socialists know where to go for health care. The congressman who called Marines cold-blooded killers is in intensive care. That's right. The evil one, John Murtha, has been hospitalized in intensive care for complications related to gallbladder surgery. Now, God forbid Murtha should have to go to a Canadian healthcare facility. He compared our troops to Nazis. May nothing happen to him or his children unto the third generation. We can only pray that in this case, God sees the truth but waits a very, very long time. But you know, it's interesting, gallbladder surgery. The gallbladder produces bile. Suspicions have it that this congressman who called Marines cold-blooded killers may be overflowing with bile. That's right. The Haitians want the United States to take over their country. Can you believe this? That's just what we need. Maybe we'll have the 51st state, Beowulf, Haiti.
Yeah, sounds like
wouldn't that be good for the economy?
Oh, yeah, fantastic choice.
Now, does Haiti have any natural resources really? I think they have bauxite, which is the starter material for aluminum. Yeah. Are they rich in bauxite?
I'll have to look it up. I don't think so.
We'll have to look it up because there must be something going on here. The Haitians certainly want us to take over. Wouldn't that be great for them?
Yeah, that'd be fantastic for them.
Well, don't miss this story. Climate emails, well, now they're claiming they were stolen by spies. As if the paranoia of the global warming liars wasn't bad enough. Citizens who want the truth to come out. And we know what happened. The scientists made it all up about global warming. And all of a sudden, they're developing a global conspiracy saying that the information that was faulty to begin with, or false, was stolen. Did you see the story of Pelosi's monumental abuse of military aircrafts for herself, her children, and her grandchildren? A jet for her family is the least she deserves. How do you think she and her husband accumulated $50 million? By hanging around in airports? But the fact of the matter is, this is an abuse of power. This looks less like a Speaker of the House and more like the head of a military junta who has appropriated the military for her own aggrandizement. And don't miss the story on Scott Brown, the conservative messiah, who's now come out saying he supports abortion. Don't miss that one. That's right. The newly elected messiah from Massachusetts says he's ready to play the role of the 41st senator, and he says he's in favor of abortion. He says that it's between a woman and her doctor. I heard the same line from Barbara Boxer, by the way. Also, not to be missed today is my important monologue, which I'm going to give you 1 minute of, on pornography versus art. Remember, I'm an American. I grew up on several magazines. When I was young, I loved Boy's Life and Flying magazines, things like that. And when I got older, I became a teenager, of course, and I loved Playboy and Road and Track. The reason I mention is because people confuse pornography with obscenity and obscenity with pornography and art with both. They don't understand what pornography is and what is not. And I talked about it in great detail today, and you can read it on michaelsavage.com.
Savage.
A recent article on WorldNet Daily talks about a national poll taken by the Marist Institute for the Knights of Columbus for part of their Moral Compass project. This poll has some pretty interesting results about young America. Joining us now is Carl Anderson, the CEO from the Knights of Columbus. Carl Anderson, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on today.
Tell us about this project.
Well, the Knights of Columbus, for almost 2 years now, has been looking at moral values and the trending of moral values in American society and American culture. We've described it as our Moral Compass Project. And we've been working with Marist Institute polling to see just where the American people are in terms of their view of the moral direction of the country, the direction the country's headed in. And so our latest venture in this project has been to look at the values and attitudes of millennials, those 18 to 29-year-olds, and contrast them with other segments of the American population and with Americans in general, because this year millennials will become the largest segment in the American population. And so we think it's very important to see what their values are, because their values will be the future of our country.
What does this poll tell us?
One of the most interesting aspects of our polling results was how Americans and millennials together view some of the fundamental questions confronting our society. For example, strong majorities of both Americans and millennials oppose greater regulation of business by government. Both Americans and millennials think there is too much greed going on in Wall Street. And Americans and millennials think that the country is headed in the wrong direction from a moral standpoint. What is very important about this polling is that this group, which is the group in the American population that has given President Obama his greatest support, also diverges from his agenda on very important issues. For example, 58% of millennials in our poll think that abortion is morally wrong. Another large majority do not want overregulation of business. 55% of millennials have lost confidence in government's ability to handle the economic crisis. And so within this population that is giving the president his strongest support, they nonetheless diverge from his agenda in important ways.
There were some surprising results about religion as well, huh?
Yes, the millennials are very religious. They're more religious than some of the other components, for example, Generation X or the baby boom generation. And in fact, they track more closely to the greatest generation of Americans, the World War II and Depression generation, in terms of their religious values. And so it is a mistake to say that the country's future is moving away from religious belief and away from religious values, because we found that the millennials are actually very strong in that way.
Well, what about Wall Street?
Millennials, like most Americans, are fed up with greed on Wall Street. They believe strongly that there should not be one set of business ethics and one set of personal ethics. They would like to see individuals' personal ethics applied in the business setting. And in fact, many millennials and many Americans believe that religious values have a place in business decision-making. That may surprise some people, but when we think about religious values, we're not talking about doctrines or matters of belief. We're talking about fundamental values such as honesty, fair treatment to one's neighbor, and treating someone as you would want to be treated. And that's very good news, because 60% of millennials and 65% of Americans in general believe that these types of values, religious values, should influence business decision-making.
What did it say about Obama's first year?
Well, they have less confidence in government's ability to fix the economic crisis than they had a year ago. And so Washington is not scoring high on their report card.
Well, what would you say our lasting impression should be from this poll?
The best news from this poll is that America's future, as we see it today in the values of millennials, those 18 to 29, they describe themselves as hardworking. They look at themselves as optimistic about the future of our country, and they have a profound concern for the welfare of others. They have deep values, and they have a moral compass. And so that should give us all optimism about our future, and it should give us all a pause to reflect upon how we have been transmitting from one generation of Americans to the next generation of Americans what it means fundamentally to be an American and the values of our society. And I think that's very good news for us.
Carl Innocent, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
It's always a pleasure, Michael. Thank you very much.
Huckleberry Finn needs music right now in order to keep going. Huckleberry needs... Wait a minute, stop. No. Didn't you get me Offenbach for today? You said you had Offenbach. Where is it? That's what I'm talking about. Now you're talking. talking. I wish I had been born in 1870. I would like to have been a cohort of Toulouse-Lautrec. Nice, different age. Gas lamp era. Prior to that nasty Edison. It's not exactly what I want. Do you have the Follies Bergère, or is this is it? No, 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 no. That's some simpy New York. That's close, 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 closer. I see the Can-Can girls and the garters and all of the drunk Frenchmen in the audience. Da, 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 da. Come on, who doesn't love this? An innocent time in the world. The War of 1812 was over. The U.S. Civil War was over. Everybody knows this, right? Can't you just see them on the stage dancing? This is pre-electricity, isn't it, guys? It's a different era. There were no problems like today. Nothing. Different world. All right, and I made my point. Sometimes I drift off in reveries, and I used to dream, and people used to say, if you could be born any time, where would you like to be born? I hope God's not listening, because he's liable to say, all right, I heard that. I was listening to your show. I had nothing to do with it. What happens the day I go to, like, to heaven, and God says, I was listening on January 7th, 2010. Didn't you say that you wanted to be born in 1870? No, I'm just kidding, God. Well, no, I take you seriously. I mean, you think you're so important. So you're going to be reborn in 1870 in France. No, please. I don't want to eat rotten cheese. Please. I don't want to live in a place where there's no hot running water. And although I like garlic, God, I don't want to be around everybody else who has garlic breath, if you don't mind. There was no mouthwash in those days. I could turn it into a show topic. When would you like to be reborn? You know, if you could pick it, what would it be? I just always liked that period. I even liked the art of that period. All of the Impressionists were painting around then. I mean, through certainly 30 years and more beyond that, but that's about when it began, if my Art 101 memory is still operational. You know, ClimateGate exposed the fraud that it was, the rigged-up data that never was. And now we have the most ferocious winter in 30 years. We're entering like a mini ice age right now. And the schmucks are pushing global warming and cap and trade taxes.
Savage. Visit TRNCentral.com, your one stop for news and all things talk radio. That's TRNCentral.com.
REIC right now is helping all kinds of people in the community, just like you, buy real estate at 95% discounts from banks that are going out of business right now. 25 banks went out of business last year, over 100 this year. Let me bring this home. Here's a home that 2 years ago was bought for $114,000. We only paid $5,400. Here's another home. This home sold 2 years ago for $120,000. We just bought it for $6,200, a beautiful four-bedroom, two-bathroom home. Why are we able to do it? Because we haven't seen the real estate market fall apart like this since the Great Depression. When the banking system failed. REIC system is allowing members today to completely recuperate their retirement that's fallen apart over the last few years, and we're ready to help you too. Call now and we'll send you a free copy of our new CD, REOs, and hear for yourself the new buzz in real estate investing. Call now, 1-800-357-5447 for your free CD. That's 800-357-5447. 1-800-357-5447. Or go online at reicfreecd.com. That's reicfreecd.com.
Call Michael now at 1-800-449-8255.
Savage.
Savage. George Bush promises not to attack Obama, and he gave his first speech in Canada. In Canada. He wouldn't dare show his face in America. The man who said that we should have deregulation, no regulation, let the free market
determine the best for the people.
Savage.
Now, you know I've criticized that rubbish from the Republicans for years. I was onto this years ago. I called them liars, the Republicans. I called them phonies. I called them gangsters. What more can I do? Say it again? What, am I going to get a halo for this? You don't know already what's true, that both parties are criminals? 99% of both parties are run by gangsters. It may as well be Mexico. It may as well be living in Mexico. What do you have faith in any of this? You think anyone's going to suffer? They're going to take money away from these criminals? They are the same. They give them the money back. It's a cycle.
Want to know the best prevention for swine flu? The most contagious disease in recorded human history? NutritionMarket.com has the answer. Vaccines are supposed to be coming soon, but what will you do till then? NutritionMarket.com has your answer. Swine flu is the only disease to ever be raised to a Phase 6 pandemic by the CDC. Want to protect yourself and your family? NutritionMarket.com. Our award-winning vitamin D could be the answer. Studies have shown that vitamin D is the best prevention for swine flu. Children are among the most susceptible, though we're all at risk. Simple vitamin D could be your answer. With an award-winning product, NutritionMarket.com can show you what is recommended for infants, children, and adults. Lightning-fast shipping, great customer service. Team up with NutritionMarket.com to help fight this pandemic. Swine flu has been shutting down schools. Isn't it worth doing what you can to protect your family? NutritionMarket.com.
Can you imagine a world without children? A world where children don't play, or dream, or imagine.
At St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, we're working every day to find cures for diseases that strike down children. Because we can't imagine a world without children. Can you?
St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Call 1-800-931-0800 or log on to stjude.org.
Do you want to experience the full impact of the Michael Savage Show? Become a premium member and get Savage Live, Savage Archives, and the Savage Podcasts. Now you can take the Michael Savage Show anywhere and listen whenever and wherever you want. Get hooked up with the Michael Savage Show today. Go to www.talkradionetwork.com. That's talkradionetwork.com. Click on Savage's picture and sign up now. Savage.
Are you living the kind of lifestyle you'd like to be living, or just getting by? Wouldn't it be better if you were earning more and had total control over your financial future? This is Roger Pasquier. I became a millionaire at age 23, doubled it by 33, and retired at 43. How did I do it? By finding good ideas and then taking action to make money. Now in my search for new opportunities, I've found one of the best ideas I've ever seen, and I want to share it with you. Not earning what you think you should be, or maybe you have the desire to become an entrepreneur and do your own thing, then this is for you. Here's an idea so powerful that it can generate an income equal to a CEO salary, and you can do it from the comfort of your own home. Write this number down now, 1-800-447-9848. We've already helped thousands increase their earnings dramatically. Generate a new income stream starting today. Call now, 1-800-447-9848. That's 1-800-447-9848.
You know, I've talked over and over again about Iran's threats to the Western world and our failure to do anything about it. Joining us now to talk about this is Ken Timmerman, who says now is the time for Obama to stop acting like Hamlet and start doing something. But, you know, before Ken speaks, Bush was no different, frankly. They also put their head in the sand.
You know, Michael, for a year now, President Obama has been playing Hamlet on Iran. He came into office saying he was going to launch immediate unconditional negotiations with the regime in Tehran over their nuclear program, a program which he has called publicly now many times a nuclear weapons program. And yet those negotiations stalled and have become completely ineffectual. By the time he first sent a U.S. diplomat to sit down with the Iranians in October, so this is 9 months after he actually takes office, the Iranian regime had already acquired enough nuclear weapons material to make their first bomb. He let a tremendous opportunity go to waste when the Iranian people took to the streets in huge numbers after the June elections that Ahmadinejad stole from the Iranian people. And Obama just sat on his hands and did nothing, thinking he could still reach out to the regime. So this bit about playing Hamlet, do I talk, do I not talk, do I engage, do I not engage, do I push for sanctions, do I not push for sanctions, has been going on for a year now, all the while the Iranian regime has been enriching more uranium and most recently, we learn, has been building more of these underground sites where they can install centrifuges and parts of their bomb program in secret. Now, all of this has now taken a new turn with last week on Thursday, the day after the State of the Union address, where Obama made two very brief passing references to Iran. On Thursday, the U.S. Senate finally passed its version of a refined petroleum sanctions act on Iran that would impose sanctions on companies that help Iran to acquire refined petroleum. This is a, you know, it's a kind of curious thing that Iran, of all countries, would need refined petroleum. But I can remember sitting down about 2 years ago in the Ohio State Legislature with a guy named Ordy Kitchery, who was a law professor from the University of Arizona. And he had discovered that despite Iran's tremendous oil exports, they're the number two gas exporter in the world and the second largest OPEC exporter of crude oil, despite that, they have never invested the money needed to build refineries to supply their own people with gasoline, diesel fuel, and cooking oil and heating oil. So he found out, Ordy Kitchery found out that they were importing something like 43% of the refined petroleum goods. He saw this as a choke point of their economy, and since then has been working with a number of people, myself included, the Foundation for Defense of Democracies and others, to try to get sanctions that would focus on the supply of refined petroleum. So finally that gets passed last week in the United States Senate. It's passed on a voice vote, and the bill is pretty good. It includes sanctions as well on the shipping companies that would actually ship the diesel fuel or heating oil to Iran, and on the insurance companies that would insure those shipments. Now, it also included a couple of other things which were very important. It gave a kind of protection, legal protection, to state legislatures that have passed laws that order their state pension funds to divest from companies doing business in Iran. This is a very important thing, since the pro-business lobby and the pro-Tehran lobbies in the United States have all argued that it would be illegal and unconstitutional for the states to make such orders on their state pension funds. So that has now been taken care of by the United States Senate as well. And in the next 2 weeks, undoubtedly, this will be culled out in conference between the House and the Senate and sent to the president's desk, where I am certain that he will actually sign the bill into law.
Now, will the president actually enforce the law?
That's something we don't know. We don't know whether he will use the waivers that are included in it that give him some kind of presidential authority to determine that for national security or foreign policy reasons that the law doesn't need to be applied. But, you know, senators like Joe Lieberman and John McCain were pretty careful to include provisions that would make it much more difficult for the president to waive this. So once he actually signs it, I think these sanctions will have some clout.
You know, what effect are these sanctions going to really have? They're going to really affect the regime in Tehran? I don't think so.
That's another story. They have already started to diversify their sources of refined petroleum. We've seen them going to China. We've seen them going to Venezuela. We've seen them also working with Austria and Germany to expand their ability to use liquefied natural gas in automobiles, trucks, and taxis. This would, in effect, if successful, and the technology is certainly there, this would allow them to obviously reduce those imports of diesel fuel and refined petroleum. So, as always, as in warfare, you've got the sword and the shield. Here, this is economic warfare. So you've got sanctions and then the ability to get around sanctions. The Iranians are obviously going to do everything they possibly can. Will it force them to change their behavior on their nuclear weapons program? I think not. But this is a necessary step in the diplomatic kabuki dance that the United States must undergo to get other countries to join with us in pushing up the pressure on the Tehran regime.
What do we do if sanctions fail? Wring our hands?
if sanctions fail and you know, the regime does not slow down their nuclear weapons program, they start making belligerent noises and engaging in more military exercises. Let's say that they actually start to assemble warheads, and we discover more documents and more information showing that they have a they're trying to mate a nuclear weapons warhead to a missile. What do we do then? You've still got a couple of steps to take before we go to war. And obviously, you know, going back to Thomas Jefferson, remember that sanctions are the only thing in the foreign policy toolbox between appeasement and war. But sanctions are not yet over. The next step in sanctions are what Representative Trent Lott of Arizona has proposed, which would be a total worldwide trade embargo on Iran. Nobody buy Iranian oil. Nobody sell Iran manufactured goods. Nobody at all, period. And any company that does would then face themselves getting barred from the U.S. market. This is, quote, extreme, but I think it is the only type of measure that will eventually get the attention of the Iranian regime. Let's not forget, Michael, this is a ideological regime in Tehran. It's a regime which, as Ayatollah Khomeini said in the very beginning of the revolution, did not care about economic pressure. He very famously told his supporters at that time, when they were complaining against international economic sanctions because they had taken our diplomats hostage in Tehran in 1979, he said famously, well, the revolution's not about the price of watermelons. So they don't care about economic pressure unless that pressure is extreme. And it would be extreme economic pressure if the United States were able to join with key trading partners of Iran in imposing a total trade embargo, which would include a ban on purchasing oil from Iran. And that would certainly bring their economy to a screeching halt.
Well, who's going to stop us from taking more effective action against Iran? Hello, Russia and China?
Well, clearly, the countries that stand in the way, Michael, are Russia, China, but also a couple of countries you might not expect, countries like Germany and Austria. The Germans and Italy, I should add. Germany, in 2008, sold $5.7 billion worth of industrial goods to Iran, their biggest sales year yet. The Austrians are selling them the technology to make liquefied natural gas and helping them with their to modernize their oil and gas fields. The Italians are also deeply involved, more than $3 billion worth of exports in 2008. Again, mainly focusing in on the steel industry, petrochemicals industry, and the oil and gas industry more generally. So in addition to China and Russia, the usual suspects, you've got some of our good friends in Europe who are deeply involved economically in Iran and would have a lot to lose should the United States insist with its partners that that trade be shut down. So recently we've seen the impact that the threat of sanctions has had on some of these companies. In Germany last week, you had a company like Siemens, one of the biggest suppliers of advanced technology to Iran. Siemens announced that it would no longer take new contracts.
Why?
There was a lot of pressure on Siemens inside Germany because they had gotten caught in the past 6 months selling technology to the Iranian military and especially the law enforcement forces that was used to put down the riots, the pro-democracy demonstrations, the nonviolent protests that we saw since June. Siemens was selling technology that could be used by the telecom ministry in Iran and by the law enforcement agencies to intercept cell phone calls, to intercept text messages, to track down dissidents, and this has proved very effective. There are scores of dissidents now in jail. Two of them were executed last week. There are another 11 who have been condemned to death by the Iranian authorities. So Siemens had, I don't want to say they had blood on their hands because I think that would be a bit of hyperbole, but nevertheless, they got caught having sold equipment to Iran, which they pretend or they claim was entirely for civilian purposes, but was used by the regime to track down the pro-freedom movement and to try to crush it. Now, Siemens is not the only one who's been pulling out. You've got Huntsman here in the United States, a company that sells chemicals and is big in the petrochemical industry. They announced that their foreign subsidiaries, who can legally still trade with Iran, would also pull out. And a number of other companies are starting to do that as well. So the threat of sanctions by the United States does have an impact on some of those big foreign companies that are supporting the Iranian regime. So it's a tool that we can use, and I believe we should use, because it will send a message to the Iranian regime that they can no longer get away with some of the murderous programs that they are carrying out. And of course, obviously, Michael, the one thing I haven't spoken about yet, but you've heard me say this many, many times, if we really want to hit the regime where it hurts, what we ought to be doing is to help the pro-democracy movement. That's what the regime really fears, much more than economic sanctions, much more than diplomatic pressure or anything the United Nations can do. They truly fear help from the outside to the pro-democracy movement on the streets inside Iran. That's where we really ought to be focusing our energy.
Thanks for the report, Ken.
Savage.
A story out of San Francisco the other day about the number of conventions and hotel visits declining rapidly.
San Francisco has long been a popular destination for conventions, and the big money those visitors bring to town is vital to the city's economy. But this year, fewer people are expected to attend conventions, and that means fewer people in hotels, eating in restaurants, or buying gifts to take back home.
Well, what do you expect with all the taxes and the bums and the filth and the protests?
It's just going to be a very tough year for us to survive. Last year was a rough year, but we're going to be down 20% to that. So we have a tough year from a convention standpoint. We're considerably off, both at the convention center and here at the hotel.
Well, maybe if San Francisco had a business-friendly environment instead of an anarchist-friendly environment, they'd want to come there. Meanwhile, Harry Reid is fostering a socialist-friendly environment of his own.
John is a great name caller. The election's over. He should leave Barack Obama alone and join with us to do good things for the country. John has no reason to be the way he is, but he's become very, very kind of opposed to everything. I'm very disappointed in how he's reacted. You know, we've had some people who've run for president and lost who've come back and become great statesmen. John Kerry's one example. Al Gore's another. Jimmy Carter. I just think he's got to get over this and move on to something else.
Carter, in my opinion, is an anti-Semite, not a great statesman. At least some Democrats have some sense, like Chris Carney, who attacked Big Sis Napolitano for not showing up at a hearing she just said dropped dead to them.
I have to echo the sentiments of a number of our colleagues today who I'm very dismayed that the secretary herself isn't here. I mean, it's probably fair to ask where the hell Secretary Napolitano.
And here's Representative Paul Brown.
I'm incensed, frankly, that she's not here. And I think the President of the United States should ask for the resignation of Secretary Napolitano and get somebody there who is not in la-la land. And frankly, I think she's in la-la land. And I don't know who else in your department is, but whoever is, they need to go.
Why don't you step up to the plate and call this program? Albany, New York. Bill, you're up. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Uncle Mike, great to talk to you. You're the uncle that I never had. I'll tell you, listening to you is great.
Thank you. Thank you. So what's on your mind today, Bill?
I disagreed a little bit with what you said yesterday about the ratcheting up of the troops is why we're getting these attacks and the sudden influx of terrorist attacks. I really believe that what's happened here is the fact that Al-Qaeda and these terrorist networks are testing the waters like they do in between any of their major attacks. If you look at the major attacks now that we've had on this country and the interests of this country, in between those time lapses, they've done a testing period. And they want to see what the knee-jerk reaction was going to be from Obama and the left. And I really believe that their target is going to be elsewhere, but right now they're trying to turn the focus and put it on the airline industry and the shortcomings that they've exposed.
Yeah, and, well, that would be the way the Arab plays chess. That's how the Bedouin plays at war. I agree with you. They've been at war from the time of birth, and the Bedouins understands very well how the game is played. So the next big attack certainly won't be on an airliner. It'll be somewhere else while we're putting all our efforts on airline security, is what you're suggesting.
Yeah, and, Doc, if you think about it, I mean, your dog Teddy. I mean, come on. Teddy could have sniffed out this guy over there. You know, I mean, of course, we know dogs are smarter than most humans anyway. I mean, Teddy could have sniffed this.
You know, you want to talk about dogs? Just a sidetrack on a dog, Bill. I discovered something. Maybe people think I'm a little nuts, but that's okay. I am. It doesn't bother me. I, at night, will sometimes play with my dog, and I lie down in the bed. He likes to sleep in the bed. He could jump up in the bed, and he'll lay there, and I hear him, whatever. And I lay next to him sometimes. I put my ear right next to his nose, and I talk to him, and I ask him a question. And I can't – he's not speaking. But do you know that he actually makes sounds in my ear that are almost – they're not audible unless you put your ear right next to the dog's nose. Through breathing, he tries to answer me.
You know something, Doc? What I heard you talking before about when you were talking and polling people whether you should run for senator or whatever. The first thing I said is, what are you asking us for, Doc? Ask your dog, because he don't lie. He'll
say Well, he wouldn't know an answer to that. But, you know, I learned how to communicate with animals because, unfortunate, my brother's unfortunate circumstances, I had to learn how to communicate with a person who could not speak and could not see. But I was the one who communicated with him through whistling, even though they told me that he couldn't understand anything. I know he could. And I've had a gift of communicating with animals ever since. But I'm telling you, animals do communicate in ways that we don't even hear. If you actually listen to them, they will communicate with you. I don't have to tell this to anyone who has horses. I'm not a person who understands horses, but I guarantee you the word horse whisperer, there's a reason for it. Animals will communicate with humans in their own way. But if I say, Teddy, tell me, blah, 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 and I put my ear right next to his snout, he makes like sounds like a little baby. He starts to emote. He's trying to tell me something. Now, I don't mean the range of emotion is very large. It's either he's sighing and he's happy, or it's a mixture of sighing, happy, sad. Let's have a little rock and roll for the minute on the Savage Nation. It's an amazing thing, dogs, but if you read Darwin's early book, The Expression of Emotions in Man and Other Animals, you'll know what I'm talking about. I was lucky enough to have read it when I was 18 years of age. It's a little-known book of Charles Darwin's. It actually has illustrations in it. It's an amazing book. With God's will and your listenership, I shall return.
Savage. Visit TRNCentral.com, your one stop for news and all things.